Hi everyone, this is Diva from Bloodhunter and you're listening to the Metal Pit Podcast.
Welcome to the Metal Pit Podcast, the ultimate dive into the albums, bands, and stories that made metal what it is today. I'm your host, Blake, and together we'll explore the legends and the anthems that keep the metal flame burning. Don't forget to visit our website, which is themetalpit.org, and follow us on Facebook and Instagram at The Metal Pit. And for the podcast, we have our own website for the podcast, which is TheMetalPitPodcast.com, and you can follow that on Facebook and Instagram at The Metal Pit Podcast. And you can find us on YouTube at The Metal Pit 666. And if you have you want to send me an email, talk about, suggest an album, maybe you want to be a guest, whatever, email me podcasts@themetalpit.org. And tonight, today, my guest is Jasmine Sandler. How are you, Jasmine?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me on. Pretty excited.
Thank you for joining me. And you are, your artist name is Jazz Rock. And is that the name they're going to find on Instagram and Facebook?
Yep. Jazz Rock Singer, Jazz Rock. It's kind of a generic term. So Jazz Rock Singer. Yes.
Okay. So first, you just want to tell us about yourself.
Yeah, sure. So again, thanks for having me on. So I do quite a bit, and my biggest passion is music. I'll start there. So I'm a business person. I'm a business owner, and I have a branding and digital marketing agency I've had for about almost 16 years now. And as part of that, because I'm a musician and a songwriter and a lover of music and a lover of metal, I have two divisions that support artists. And one is called JSM for Artists, and it's really about helping artists make money and think of themselves as business owners. And then the second one is Warrior Women in Business, which as part of that Warrior Women in Business, there's a whole series of concerts I produce here in New York and Los Angeles that help women find opportunities in the music business industry. I also speak quite a bit and teach in the music business industry. Mm-hmm. So that's on the business side of things. Other notes of interest is as a musician, you know, I started with classical piano many years ago and then kind of gave that up for a while and then got back into music. And I thought I wanted to be a guitarist, and I was taking lessons for, I don't know, a few years, and I was getting very frustrated. And one day I just turned to my guitar teacher and I said, could I start singing? And we were doing a Three Days Grace song. I love that band. And so I just started singing. I basically put the guitar on the shelf, never looked back. And I've been studying vocals and now bass for about 6 years, and I attend Juilliard. Very, very, very serious about music on a number of fronts. So I'm happy to be here.
Cool. Now so first, okay, you're the leader of the band Silent Fury. You want to talk about that band right now first, please?
Yeah, sure. So in 2018, I was leading a band. They actually brought me in, and they didn't have a name. And I didn't also mention that I've been a poet my whole life. I've won like multiple awards in poetry. So anyway, so I just like felt that there was an underserved market for musicians. And I also thought that a lot of creatives kind of get like, they procrastinate, they get kind of stuck in their own minds, and they have a lot of anger that they don't express. So one day we were in the rehearsal studio, and I was writing a song called Nightmare, and which is now the title of Silent Fury. And I thought, you know, there's a lot of silence in the fury of people, because I realized I was writing songs about that topic, and I wanted something that people could like utilize and leverage to get their anger out in a way that's positive. So anyways, that's what Silent Fury, the name, is all about. So I started the band in 2018 as a four piece. At the time, we were actually doing Black Sabbath covers, Guns N' Roses covers, right? And I personally don't really like doing cover songs. I'm a natural songwriter. Mm-hmm. That's who I am. And so those guys that were my bandmates at the time, they really just wanted to focus on covers. They really just wanted to focus on doing YouTube videos. I'm like, I'm a people person. I'm a stage person. I'm a speaker. I want to do shows and I want to write originals. So I could kind of left them, but kept the name, built the brand. And so Silent Fury has been around since 2018. We are considered like a punk metal band. That's, I guess, in the genre, you know, but when people ask me what the music sounds like, my answer is always the same. I say, you tell me, because I'm a big lover of art. And I think art is very subjective, you know? So most of our shows have been in the New York City area, like all, you know, the traditional Lower East Side punk venues, but I've been branching us out quite a bit to now do more festivals. And also because I produce concerts, we're always playing as part of the concerts. And my team has matured and developed. I've matured and developed. And I think our music now is interesting because it's gone from pure New York City punk. You know what I'm saying? Like a lot of people would say, oh, you guys are like the Ramones. You're like Patti Smith. And now people are looking at music and they're thinking, oh, this is much more like, oh, it's a punk metal like ballad that you're doing that's global. So I think the music has really, really matured, which I'm very proud of.
And you mentioned it briefly in there, but did you want to talk about your progression from punk to metal?
Yeah, sure. So to be honest with you, Blake, when I started singing, I really didn't know what I was doing. So at all, like zero. And I'm a big, huge believer in learning. So to get better and obviously discipline and practice. So when I started singing, I didn't really know what I was doing, but I was really good at writing lyrics and figuring things out. Like I would go into a room full of musicians and just figure out a song and then start singing with no idea. And I was like, am I even in key? You know, I really had no idea. So I said to myself, like, I would ask the other musicians, how do I sound? They would say, you sound punk. And I never knew if that was positive or negative. So I said to myself, I want to become a better singer. So I started studying like a lot. You know, I did like all the ear training courses. I started paying a lot of different vocal coaches. And at one point I started studying with a Broadway vocal coach. And in working with him over a couple of years, I said, you know what? I said, what can I do to get even better as a singer? He said, you know, you should audition for Juilliard. But he said to me, I don't think you're going to get in. And I'm the type of person when someone tells me you're not going to do something, then I want to do it more. So I really worked my ass off, excuse my language, and I studied very hard. And I ended up auditioning for Juilliard twice. The first time I didn't get in, the second time I got in. And now I've been a student at Juilliard going from like the basic vocals to now advanced vocals where I'm studying. I'm actually doing Broadway work and getting into opera. And so my favorite bands for me, like I just went to Apocalyptica this week, front row. I had the best time of my life. And they don't have a singer, but to me, operatic metal to me brings together what I knew as a child, which was classical music, to metal that I love. So like that's my dream. That's my goal, is to do like this operatic metal type of work. But I'm still on the progression. Yes.
Like I'm something to eat, turns to me at speed. His feet.
Mentioned like Broadway or rock operas, you want to continue with that? You're planning something there?
Yeah, sure. So I live in New York City. I also failed to mention, because I do so many things, I'm the board director for New York City for this organization out of London called the Arts and Culture Network. So they bring together professionals, music, traditional art, right? So I run their events and I do things around that because I have a big love for Broadway. I'm like in, I live like pretty much very close to Broadway. So what I through Juilliard, when I had to choose repertoire for my last semester, my favorite play of all time is Jesus Christ Superstar. So all time. And so I chose that for my repertoire for singing, and I really got into it. And I realized that, you know, my songs are all stories and they're all very like to make a difference on socioeconomic, you know, global issues. And I said, you know what, I really want to write my own rock opera. So luckily, I've been already working, Blake, on projects where I've been writing. I've been writing songs for a graphic novel series called Tekashi the Wanderer, which now has 3 books published. So I've been writing songs to support the artist trailers, and the artist is now working to make that a full film. So my idea is, why don't I take these songs and these stories and create a rock opera? So I'm very much in the songs. I've written about 7 so far for that. And you'll hear that on the albums that I have out. But more importantly right now, where I am with it is, you know, just trying to figure out with people that I know on Broadway, how do I make this happen in the best way? And it's a lot of learning, you know? So, I mean, it'll probably start maybe in 2026 as like a black box type of thing. You know what I mean? And then maybe go to off Broadway. I mean, if it takes 5 years, it's fine with me. But we're kind of, that's where we are right now.
It's so, so you must be a fan of TSO probably
too. Oh yeah, sure. Absolutely. Yeah.
And of course there's that Sabotage was from New York, weren't they?
Yes, absolutely. Yes.
Let's see here. What about, okay. So you have your Warrior Women in Business podcast. You want to talk about what you talk about on that podcast?
Yes. So Warrior Women in Business, just very quickly, the whole mission of it as an organization is to help female entrepreneurs and female artists drive, you know, to give them an opportunity to connect with others, to give them direct access to female leaders. I mean, women that have, you know, been there, done that, have, multi-million dollar businesses or running billion-dollar companies. Those are the types of people you'll find on my podcast. I handpick my guests. They have to be leaders in their area. I've interviewed women in leaders in the military, finance, law, music, of course. And the whole purpose for the podcast is for me to have a real one-on-one private kind of conversation with them where they give actionable tips that female entrepreneurs and female artists can use. So the podcast, that's why I mix it between finding leaders in the music industry, because there's a lot going on there. There's good things going on there for women right now, you know, and we need to hear about it. So that's what the podcast is about. It's really, I don't know, it's really fun for me to have the challenge of getting these leaders on the podcast. I really enjoy it.
And that's on YouTube, but is it also on Spotify and Apple?
Yeah, it's YouTube, Spotify, Amazon, Apple, like all your podcasts.
Yeah, okay. And let's see, and what are your, you also have a comic book project, your comic book music project. You want to talk about that?
Yeah, that's what I was mentioning before. That falls under, there's two pieces to it. One is Tekashi the Wanderer, which is, I didn't write it. I read the music. But it's a pretty cool post-apocalyptic story about, I used to be a competitive boxer and I'm a hockey player. I didn't mention that, but a very active hockey player. But as far as that goes, the story is about a boxer who goes to the moon, and the moon becomes where we go after the earth gets destroyed. And it's overrun by these warriors, these men that rape and pillage, and they just basically rule everything. And there's absolutely no philosophy or, you know, anything 21st century involved with this future. It's a very cool series. So I've written like Tekashi, the anthem I've written for that, Dead Weather I wrote, which I love that song. It's punk, it's cool, it's really fast. It's about like the climax of the story when the whole story is about how do we mine water? There's no water. And the only person that knows how to mine water on the planet is a woman, which is really cool. So anyways, that's that story. And then Greedy Elevator is a whole nother comic book series. And that's a song that I wrote for that series that's specifically for artists. It's specifically for artists. So it's about, because I live in New York City and because my life is split between business and music, I see both sides. To me, as one little person, I wanted to write a song, and honestly, it was very organic, that got musicians to kind of stand up and rise up against capitalism and earn their worth. Because back in the Renaissance days, you know, they were up here in terms of the money, you know what I'm saying? So they were commissioned. And I think that artists across the board need to get paid. So Greedy Elevator is really cool. There is an actual motion comic that's out, Greedy Elevator, right now, and it's up for an award. So it's really cool. I don't know. And everybody loves that song. And I think they love that song because it speaks to them and they want to do something, you know, whether they're an actor or a painter or a musician.
Yes. And actually, I think you're the first hockey player that's been on the podcast.
Yes, I love it.
It's not from Canada, of course. So of course, that's good for me. Now, what do you play in a women's league or what do you play in?
Well, tonight I have a game. It's a co-ed league, but I do play on a women's team, a travel team. And the reason I like playing with them is because, I mean, I played both, but the women's team, just to be candid, I score a lot more goals. And they're more open. Like I'm transitioning now from center to defense, because defense is always something I wanted to play, but I was like a little bit too afraid to play it. Since I started playing it, I feel that it's the best position on the ice, period, for your to be able to see the field. And like, I don't know, I just absolutely love it. So I play on the women's team traveling. And then here where I am right now, there's a rink next door and where I am right now.
Yes.
And I play like in co-ed and open hockey, whatever they give me.
And now, so what's your favorite NHL team? Do you have one?
So I grew up as a Boston Bruin. You know what I'm saying? I grew up as a Bruins fan in Boston. But I worked for the NHL. I actually used to do public relations for the Panthers and the Lightning.
Oh, uh-huh.
And so in those years, I met all the teams because I was in PR. So my favorite team is the Kings because they invited me out for drinks. That's the whole story. So I love them. But I love hockey. I don't know. I'm not like a team person anymore because as a hockey player, I just go after skills.
Yes.
So like my favorite player who I met a few months ago here in New York is Austin Matthews. It's my hands down My favorite, like if I could be a hockey player, I would be him. The skills are insane.
Yes.
So like, yes.
And do you have you ever watched the Professional Women's Hockey League that's in its second season? Have you seen any of those games or?
Yes, I have. So actually not my last song that was released, but the song before that, Warrior Women, which is the anthem for my podcast. That's a song that I've been talking to them about using for the PWHL. And I
Oh,
wrote
cool.
that song sitting on the bench playing hockey with men because I got pissed off because I'm really good at face-offs. That's like my only best thing in hockey. So I get pissed off that I wasn't getting allowed to take face-offs. So the bridge of that song is all about face-offs in hockey. So yeah. So no, I've gone to a couple games, and actually, the PWHL here, they play at the Devils
Yes.
Prudential Center, is
Yes.
actually pretty popular, so it's good. And I do the Montreal charity tournament like every other year. It's so much fun. And so I played like not they don't try, but like I played with the Canadian Women's
Yes.
Olympic team. I know that they don't try against us, but it's really fun.
That's good. I would love to get one of the players from that league on, but I got to figure out if any of
Oh
us
yeah, just
have
let me know.
enough.
I'd be happy to introduce you.
Would you
I
do?
know a lot of the Olympians on the US side, but the Canadian ones, yeah, I could probably connect you.
Yeah. Well, I need to.
I had Theo Fleury on my not this not Warrior Women, but he was on. I used to have another podcast where I'd interview athletes and CEOs around the world, and I did two episodes with Theo.
Oh, really?
Yeah,
Cool.
he's badass. So yeah, I probably know somebody.
Okay. Well, I need to know that they like heavy metal, so I've been trying to see their Instagrams, but I don't see
Oh,
about
all
what kind
right.
of music they like, right?
That also makes sense. It's a metal podcast.
But yeah. But anyway, okay. Let's see. Did I cover everything there? Would you want to talk about your thoughts on the current music industry?
Yeah, so actually, I failed to mention that I'm a speaker at NAMM. You know NAMM, right?
Yes.
Okay. So I've been speaking at NAMM. I think this year was my fourth time speaking at NAMM, which is really cool. And I got the most out of it this year because I was invited to speak on the She Rocks panel. My friend Laura Whitmore, she's a badass. She's the VP of marketing for, I don't play guitar, but for the company called Positive Grid. I don't know if you know them, but they make amps, smart amps. Anyway, so Laura also runs the She Rocks Awards, and they like have all the top women in rock get awarded. It's a very cool award ceremony. So she had a panel of like handpicked women who are doing something as leaders and speakers and educators in the music industry. So I got chosen, which was really cool. And so we talked about specifically on that panel ways for women to think about their careers. And for me, as a speaker and educator in the music business industry, my mission is really about keyword for me is monetization. And I interviewed Janine DiArdio from Guitar Center and other people in the music industry. For me, what I see for women specifically, anyway, because it's where I am right now, is that women have a lot of opportunities that they didn't used to have, in the music industry. And there are rising trends. So for example, I'm sitting right now at a drum set. There's been such a rise in female drummers, for example, and traditional male roles that women are like, I'm starting with musicians, that are tend to be being broken these days. Like, so for example, I run a couple of jams in New York, like when I have time. And it used to be when women signed up for the jams, right? It was the only singers, you know what I'm saying? I'm like, hello, do you guys do anything else? So now more and more, I'm seeing a trend of more sponsored female guitarists, especially like at NAMM. And I played with a bunch of them, sponsored female bass players, sponsored female drummers. So I think number one is that is changing and that's interesting. Number two, I mean, I have a lot to say, so I'm just going to try to tell you quickly because this is a world I'm in. The other thing in the music industry that I see that's interesting, again, from a monetary standpoint, are new positions or careers that are being developed that are like complementary careers that are interesting, right? So like the AV world, right? The AV world used to be, I don't know how to put it, but for me, I think the AV world used to be more of like an enclosed community, right? So there's way more schools opening up for AV. There's way more career opportunities for audio engineering, for video work, I think people need to look out for, because that's a rising trend as far as career development in the music industry. And that leads into other things like more opportunities to get paid as like tour operators or managing equipment on tours. There, as far as like careers, that's where I'm really focused. I see great things happening, not just for women, but for men also. And then the last thing I want to say in that, I mean, hand in hand would be other companies that have traditional products. Like we're on Zoom right now, for example, right? Mm-hmm. So traditional, and my background, I didn't even mention, is IBM. Like that's where I would develop my career initially. So in the tech world, a lot of those traditional B2B tech companies are now spilling over into the music industry. So I interviewed the CEO of NAMM last year on my podcast, and we talked about that. I said to him, I was like, John, how come there's now like a whole wing at NAMM that was never there before, right? On the exhibit floor of tech companies, right? That are buying exhibitor booths, because it's really developing. So I have to say that the music industry is very exciting, I think, right at this time, from that standpoint, in terms of career opportunities for new businesses to get involved, to make money, and definitely for musicians and non-musicians to make money from the music industry. The last thing I'll say about the music industry, because there's just way too much to say, is that, you know, there's always this talk, especially like people are always asking me about, what do you think about male domination in the music industry, right? Because I have the Warrior Women in Business podcast, and I actually see good things happening. I don't see bad things happening. You know, you always hear in the industry news kind of, you know, men and, you know, getting sued or going to jail, like all these things. But I actually see the opposite. I see men helping women. I see women helping men. I see more cross collaboration. Like I've been talking to CF Martin, I interviewed to be on their board a couple of years ago. And I mean, they're a company that definitely exemplifies men and women working together in a very positive way. So, you know, I just see a lot of good things happening in the industry, Blake.
Okay. And okay, so we are going to talk about an album here in a second. So we're going to lead, unless I don't think I've missed anything, but we gave you a little interview there. And but you mentioned that you progressed from punk to metal. So obviously punk was your first love in the hard, heavy music thing. But how did you get into metal music then?
Oh, actually, my progression from punk to metal is as a singer, not as a musical lover. Okay. So I'll tell you about my metal.
Okay.
Okay. So ever since I can remember, so my first love of music actually was classical. So that's the first music that I heard, you know, that I remember hearing. My oldest brother, who has since passed away, which really guts me because we were best friends. He is the person that raised me on metal, right? He kind of made me his little, you know, like he would bring me to concerts. He would, you know, he would bring me in when he would have parties, and I was like 7 years old, you know, is like, okay, you're going to listen to Black Sabbath. And Black Sabbath, the first poster I bought was a Black Sabbath poster, you know, with Dio and the horns, and it was neon. And I remember I put it over my bed, and it used to scare me every night. I vividly remember that as like a 7 year old, you know. But anyway, so Black Sabbath was definitely like my very beginning of metal music. Very, very beginning. My first concert was Judas Priest, front row with Dokken, which was the bomb. Oh my God, I love George Lynch. But anyway, so, and Rob Halford's in my top three singers, you know. Mm-hmm. So Judas Priest, you know, Black Sabbath were like the first things I remember. I'm talking like 7, 8 years old. Like I was hooked on metal, you know. I was just hooked on metal. And I even remember then like thinking like that metal and trying to convince people, even like getting into my teens, because they were like, oh, you're just a badass that wears leather and spikes. And I'm like, no. Metal is sophisticated. I always like believe that metal is sophisticated and it's intelligent. And it is. And mm-hmm. So, you know, for me, my favorite, like my favorite singer of all time is Dio. I mean, everything about him, he's my role model. He's my role model, like, on so many respects. You know, he's like, what is he, like 4'11 or whatever, 4'10 maybe? But his voice and his being is like bigger than God. You know what I mean? So, like, yeah, I mean, I just listened to metal with my brother and would go to all the metal shows growing up, and I would get protected. And I don't know, I loved it. It was like my world, you know, pretty much metal was my world. Still is, you know, I mean, I listen to it every day.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay, so we are going to talk about Black Sabbath today, you know.
Yeah.
Because I asked who you wanted to do it on, and you said Sabbath. And but we've already done Heaven and Hell, and we've done Paranoid. I believe that's the only two we've done. So you picked Master of Reality for the one that we could do. And that is, this is the third studio album by Sabbath, and it was released in 1971, often hailed as a cornerstone of doom metal, stoner rock, sludge metal. Let's see, Roger Bain produced it. He also produced the first two albums, but I believe that was the last one he produced. Then Tony Iommi kind of took over, I believe, after that.
I know.
And you mentioned Dio was, so what, do you remember the first time you, or what was the first album you heard of Sabbath? Was it a Dio one then?
Well, the first song I really remember was Sweet Leaf. Like, that's the song to me that, like, I don't know, that's, I think that's my favorite Black Sabbath song. And then Fairies Wear Boots. Mm-hmm. Those two, I think, are like my top songs.
Mm-hmm. You know?
Definitely. They are so good. I don't know. You know?
For me, like, because usually I ask myself this question, but I've already answered it, and I can't really even really remember, because it's hard, because I'm older, obviously. But I remember the janitor at my high school sold me some heavy metal albums, and I bought Black Sabbath's debut album off him. But I probably already heard Paranoid on the radio, I'm assuming, before that. But yes, it's hard to remember exactly. But anyway.
Yeah. I mean, and I also would say Sabbath, Bloody Sabbath. It's probably one of the greatest songs of all time. So.
So anyway, so yes, we're going to talk about the third album and go through. Now, this is, it's a short album.
Yeah.
It's only 30 something, 35 minutes long or something like that.
Yeah, I played it for the first time in a while, and I was like, man, where's the rest of the album?
And there's really only six real songs on it. There's two short instrumentals, so we'll mention those briefly, but we'll start with the one you already mentioned, Sweet Leaf. Now, why is it like your favorite song then?
Okay, so something I've realized as a singer and a songwriter that I didn't realize when I was a kid listening to this song is that that first 10 seconds of the song, like, grabs you. You know what I'm saying? And the coughing, I swear to God, the coughing, it just, like, brings you into the room visually. Like, to me, that brought me into their room. And, like, I saw them in my head, you know, like rehearsing with a cloud of smoke, you know, and I could smell it and I could see it, you know what I mean? Listening to the album, you know, in my brother's room. And it just like, I don't know. It's like, I don't, and even as a kid, I thought like it was nostalgic in a way. And it also obviously was talking about something that was, you know, controlled at the time, not like now, but something that people couldn't talk about back then. But I think what the song does in a wonderful way is it brings the beauty out of something that is controlled and brings the beauty out of something that is like hush, hush. But here it is, we're talking about Sweet Leaf, right? And, you know, it's like in a way that's like indirect. If you don't know anything about weed, you know, you would listen to the song, and I did. I was thinking, like, if I listen to this song in two different ways, if I listen to this song as a stoner, and I listen to this song as a conservative person that never smoked pot before, you know, it still has the same weird effect, you know? It just, I don't know, and it has this, like, dormitory feel to it, if you know what I mean, like this, like, club that you're in, and For me, and I think anybody that listens to metal, and I don't care if they don't agree, I think that they feel like outliers in a sense, you know? So it kind of brings you, it's kind of tells you like, hey, you like you're okay. And it's powerful. And I love the melody, of course, you know what I mean? But I'm saying more from like a just like introspectively now thinking about why that song is so powerful to me.
And I researched some of these songs, obviously, which I always do, I guess. But
Yeah, I didn't research anything.
the coughing, I guess, is actually some of it is Tony Iommi coughing, because Ozzy brought a joint to the studio and gave it to him, and he reacted badly to it, so he was coughing a lot. So I guess they recorded it,
Wow.
and they put that on the song. So yeah, so it has a tape loop of Tony Iommi coughing from a joint he was smoking.
That's so fun. Well, they did a wonderful job because it sounds
And the
like.
title of the song, I guess, is taken from a packet of amber leaf rolling tobacco, which I assume is an English thing or in England. But of course, this is 1971, so we would need to find an old English person that might recognize that name, amber leaf rolling tobacco. But yeah, so yes, and of course, we already, yeah, the song's about cannabis, which of course you figured out pretty early. And yeah, that's probably one of the earliest stoner metal songs, I guess you could call it. Because I don't think it really, the first, I didn't re-listen to any Black Sabbath albums, but I know it's not, the first album isn't, because this is a little different than the first two albums,
Yeah.
as they had more say, I guess, in it. And then we go to track two, which is After Forever. And what do you think of this one?
So is that the one? Let me just remember. So that's the one that's a little bit more instrumental, no?
It's a 5.5 minute song. It's probably one of the longer ones on it, but it's a Christian themed song that was written by Geezer Butler, because he was
Oh yeah, okay,
Catholic.
right. Sorry. I told you I'm terrible with titles.
That's okay.
So I think for me anyway, like, you know, I think I was saying how I started trying when I tried guitar, I ended up hating it. And then I started singing and I fell in love with the bass. And I think like that song and anything that Geezer has written for me, like I love the bass and all of my songs have a bass solo. Every single one, you know? So I love the bass. So I think that song for me, as I remember it, is I feel like that kind of two things. So one is I think that helps to define that album a little bit, like as a different album, you know what I'm saying? And then also because the album and the album cover, I love that album cover, you know. I think that that album and that album cover, they're really it's really trying to say something that's different from the other two albums for me anyway. And I think that that song, as I recall it, I don't remember the whole 5 minutes, but like most of it, you know, things that stand out for me are this like feeling of looking like from the outside in, you know what I mean? That's what I remember from the song and the heavy bass. It's kind of like I don't have it in front of me, but that's kind of what I'm remembering, I would say, about the song.
I'm trying to find, I read something earlier about the album cover, but Tony Iommi said it's like it's slightly Spinal Tap-ish.
No, it is. I mean, what
But
I love about that, I mean, I love those colors, you know, and I love the colors, and I think that it's like it's plain, but it's like ha like any good brand, it has longevity, and it like it. I don't know, that album cover just like really cements them, and it's almost like I don't know why, but I feel like because I used to be a huge Blue Oyster Cult fan, huge. I still love Blue Oyster Cult, but I think like for me that kind of had that feel to it. Like maybe that's why I chose this album, you know, because it's like that Blue Oyster cultish type of thing going on. You know what I mean? I don't know how to put it.
I just seen like you mentioned Blue Oyster Cult. I was just watching because Saturday Night Live, which obviously you probably know, 50th anniversary, whatever. And they had an episode where they did a song where Will Ferrell was playing the
Yeah,
cowbell, and they were doing Don't Fear the Reaper or whatever.
Oh my, it's such a good, you know what's great about that song for me? I mean, it's a great, that's a great, I know it's nothing to do with Black Sabbath, but that is a great, 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 great song for so many reasons. So I was doing a jam. I'm just gonna say this quickly. And this small, slight woman came in, and it was a metal jam. And she said, I said, what instrument do you play? She's like, oh, I want to play the keys. I said, well, what do you want to play? She said, Don't Fear the Reaper. I was like, what? I'm so excited. And then it's just when I just started to play bass. I had no idea what I was doing. I mean, I'm still learning bass, but it was easy to play. That song is a great song for like a jam or, and it's such a good song. I love that song. But yes, I know the Will Ferrell.
Yes, and I'm sure that'll be on tomorrow, I think, is when the anniversary show is on.
Yeah, I mean, even though I live in New York, Blake, I still haven't ever gone to a live taping. It's ridiculous. I should go.
I would like that because I've watched it since I can remember Saturday Night Live, and even don't I know a lot of people hate it now or something, but I still think it's pretty funny, some of it anyway.
No, it is funny.
Yeah. But yeah, I would like to see it live. I've been to New York twice, but we never thought about going to see it at the time.
I'll send you the link I'll send you the link so you can look at all the shows. You have to do it way in advance. So I went to like a couple of TV shows lately through that, but I'll send it to you. Yeah. You have to like do it like way, way.
Okay. Okay. Track 3 is just an instrumental. It's called Embryo. It's only 28 seconds long. It's more or less the lead into the next song, Children of the Grave. You have anything to say about
Embryo? Oh my God, I love Children of the Grave.
Okay.
Oh my God, how much do I love that? For me, when I think about Black Sabbath, I think about the greatest songs. I think about like Heaven and Hell, Children of the Grave, Fairies Wear Boots, right? Like they all like to me, I'm like, oh, that's so Sabbath. You know what I'm saying? And Children of the Grave is, oh, it's such a great song from like for me, I'm a songwriter. So from a visual standpoint, it really gets like looped into the story. And it's like, it's so recognizable. As soon as you hear it, you know, it's Sabbath, you know, it's Children of the Grave. You know that he's telling like a really deep story, and it's hard hitting. It's, I don't know. I feel like a lot of film directors, you know, in my opinion, in horror have like, they must have heard that song because there's a lot of movies I'll watch where I'll say, hey, they should have used Children of the Grave in this movie. Like, you know, why are they not using it? Probably because they don't know, but it's a great song. I mean, I could listen that in Heaven and Hell, those two, like I could listen to all day. So I don't know what else to say about it. It's just a really great song.
Well, like for me, like, so this came out in 71. So people already know my age on here. So I was 6. So I obviously didn't hear it.
Oh,
times are different now. Like you were 7 when you were hearing it. But back then there was.
Well, I got to say I was 7 because my parents were my dad left when I was like 4. My mom was never around. And this is honestly the reason I got into metal. If it weren't for that, like my brother wouldn't have grabbed me and like been my caretaker. Mm-hmm. So kind of thank God for that. Oh, you know what I mean?
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. But go ahead. Sorry.
But back when I was 6, of course, there was no internet. They weren't playing that song on the radio, but I did like horror movies. So when I first discovered Sabbath, I was probably already in my teens. I didn't discover it was Number of the Beast. Iron Maiden was the first heavy metal album I really metal was. So that's really when I got into it. It was in 1982 where I really knew what heavy metal was. Yeah. And so that's probably when I heard this album. And I liked horror movies. So Children of the Grave, which you already mentioned, that should have been in horror movies. It just reminds me of horror movies. So it's a great title, of course.
Yeah, and that's also why I mentioned Fairies Wear Boots. So I feel like what Ozzy does is he thinks in those ways. I think that he thinks in those ways in a different way. I mean, Dio's my number one, but I think he thinks in those ways in a different way than Dio. I feel like Dio is much more fantastical, for sure. And he, if he was here now, I would definitely ask him to star in my rock opera. You know what I mean? Yes. That's him. But I think Ozzy takes it and he kind of like, if I were going to blend characters, which I'm doing now, he kind of goes into like this Alice Cooper world in a way. Do you know what I mean? Like, and he brings in that like horror and that doom. So I think that's why Black Sabbath is very unified between the two singers and the types of songs from like a songwriter standpoint. I don't know if I'm going too far off, but that's kind of cool. what I see.
And it, well, I guess Kerrang! Magazine in 2020, I guess they ranked the top Black Sabbath songs, and the Children of the Grave was number six on their list. If that means
Nice.
anything. But yeah, for Aussie Sabbath song, actually Aussie Sabbath albums. I mean, I think because I'm not that big of an Aussie fan, even though I like Aussie's first two solo albums a lot, but that
Oh,
was
yeah,
more
for
because of
sure.
Randy Rhoads too. But and
I
I don't.
also like, I have to say, I love Jakey Lee. I just want to say, but keep going.
But yeah, this is probably one of my favorite. I love Fairies. I think Fairies Wear Boots is my favorite Aussie Sabbath song, and then
Yeah,
Black
it's so good.
Sabbath song, of course,
Yeah.
and this one, and then there's another one coming up, which is also good for that. But yeah, I'm not a big like Aussie vocal fan or whatever, but it's probably just because I didn't get, I was into, like I said, Iron Maiden was the first one, and I was all Iron Maiden at the time, and then Metallica and Thrash.
Are you, but are you a Paul Di'Anno or Bruce Dickinson? Who do you favor?
Bruce Dickinson, because I heard Number of the Beast first, right? So
Oh, okay.
I heard Bruce
Yeah.
Dickinson first. I did go boat and get the first two, and I still like the first two albums a lot. But I think Bruce Dickinson is definitely the
Yeah,
better
I love
choice
him. Yeah,
going
I love the
further,
Drake.
anyway.
All right, sorry. I could talk about
Oh,
Maiden for hours, but we're not talking
okay.
about this. Sorry.
We'll have you. Well, we've already done like what six, I think, Maiden podcast episodes already.
Yeah, I mean, so I actually so I interviewed the one of my clients is Midtown Comics here in New York, and so they had a, you know, Bruce had his Mandrake signing at Midtown Comics last winter, so I got to meet Bruce, which was cool, and I interviewed not Bruce, I wanted to, but they wouldn't let me, but I interviewed the owner of the store kind of about this whole subject which I'm involved with, which is the comic book music crossover, and there's so much happening there. And I feel like it's good for Bruce to do this. And I didn't even realize how much he's already done in comic book writing. Like, he's been doing it forever. Who knew? So, anyway, like, you did? I thought you were just a singer. But anyway,
Well, he's done like he's a pilot too, right? And he's the fencing.
he's the ultimate Renaissance man. Yes.
Okay, then we go to side two if we're in the old days, which I am. So, and it
Wow.
also it leads off with an instrumental. It's a minute and a half. Orchid or orchid? I'm sorry, I'm
I
getting.
thought it was Orchid for some
Is it
reason.
Orchid? Okay.
I thought it was.
So, do you have anything to say about that song? You said
So
instrumental, but.
I think that's so I think on this album with that song and then like the Solitude, I think that they are like getting more, it feels more romantic than normal Black Sabbath. So that's kind of when I heard that. I felt like they didn't totally get there from my perspective because I listen to a lot of opera and classical music at home. But I think that that was a kind of like the development into that. And I love that, you know what I mean? It has more meaning and it makes you think more, and that's what I love about music. So I think that that's where that's going.
Well, because of the name Black Sabbath and then the early songs like that, and people thought they were Satanist or whatever, of
Right,
course,
they
which they really weren't. They
No.
just had a couple evil songs or whatever.
Yeah.
And like, but you know, and so maybe they were thinking, let's write a few songs that so that people know we're not. It doesn't really matter, really. Probably made them sell more albums in the early time.
You're right.
Evil
You're right.
kid.
You don't even
Whatever.
know. I mean, I don't know.
Anyway, okay, so then we go into where do we go? The next
You're
song
in
is Lord of This
silence.
World, right? Yes. Okay.
Yeah. Okay. With the title, you know, I think the title and the song totally fit for that song. I think it's like a bigger type. It's like a bigger song. You know, that's like a real song. It's a bigger song. I felt like the instrumentals were nice, but I felt like this. I was like, okay, where's the next song? And this is more of a like a fully developed song. And if I'm remembering this one correctly, like most Black Sabbath, there's a lot of Tony Iommi in there, which, oh my God, like the best, first favorite guitarist, probably still favorite guitarist. And I love his guitar work in there, but I also think it had like, I don't know. I walked away from that song thinking like that song for Ozzy, for if I were him, I was thinking that he's kind of trying to say, I don't know, because I didn't grow up in Birmingham, but in the industrial, and although I did live in London for a year, I'm thinking that that song to me, when I listened to it, was more about like, we're, you know, like kind of saying like either he or we are bigger than we're intended to be. That's just kind of what I got out of that song, is that they were trying to kind of like say something about where they were going in the world, or where they were living and where they were going in the world. It's just kind of like how I interpreted the song. I don't know if it's correct at all, because I didn't know. I don't do research, you know, like I just kind of listened to the songs, and I was like, and I had to re-listen to it. So that's kind of what I was thinking of, and it reminded me of what do you call it? Not the sound, but the meaning of and you know, you might think I'm crazy, but like where he's going with ultimate something in Ultimate Sin. Like, do you know what I mean? I love that album. I love that. That's my favorite album cover of all time. But so I just saw those two, like, I don't know, that Ozzy's trying, he's trying to say something that's bigger. He's trying to make a statement either on where he lives or war or the world. It's something like that, you know. I just don't really know. But that's what I got. It kind of, I was like, oh, I was trying to piece it together, you
Now,
know.
I'm not sure. I don't remember where I wrote this from, if it was from Wikipedia or if it was from somebody else. But they thought the song was sung from the viewpoint of Satan, who condemns humanity for straying from God or something like that. But it's
Really?
another Christian themed song, I guess. And I believe Geezer wrote most of the lyrics, I believe, back then, if I'm not
Oh.
mistaken, and he was religious or whatever, or Christian, I
Well,
guess.
I thought they were all, I actually thought they were all very religious. No?
They were all what? Sorry?
I thought that they were all religious. I
Chris.
thought they were
Oh,
Christian.
possibly, but I guess he must have been more so
Oh, I
than the
see.
rest, I guess. I don't know.
Oh.
And I could do have one that's see on ch on songs, Children of the Great, Lord of This World, the one, and then Into the Void, which is coming up. Tony Iommi tuned his guitar down 1.5 steps. I don't know. I have a guitar, but I don't know what that means.
I know what that means. That's yeah. So that's like the C. That's a C, C sharp.
Well,
So I,
he
that's why
wanted
I
to
said the
reduce.
guitar in that one was really interesting.
He wanted to reduce the string tension so it wasn't as
Oh,
painful because of the accident he had at the factory where he lost the tips of
I know.
two of his
Ugh.
fingers or whatever. So that,
Horrible.
but and the bass, Geezer Butler also tuned down his bass to match it or whatever, and it made it a
Oh.
bigger, heavier sound, they said. And it says we tuned even lower to help Ozzy vocally, but then he'd sing higher anyway, so it kind of defeated the purpose.
That's Ozzy, right?
And Ozzy also, in Ozzy's autobiography, I Am Ozzy, he stated that he cannot remember much about recording Master of Reality, apart from the fact
That's
that
because
Tony,
Sweetleaf's on there.
except
That's
that Tony detuned his guitar to make it easier to play.
funny. No, Ozzy's—he's got his own, you know.
Yes.
Vocally, I gotta be honest with you. I used to not really like Ozzy. Like I wasn't like, oh, I'm a big Ozzy fan. But then as a singer, I started listening to him more. And what I like about him is his own, he's got that own weirdly unique but good voice. Like it's like a, it's good. I don't even know where to put it, which is good. You know what I mean? I like his voice. Now it's like grown on me. I don't know. Like he's got this stylish twang. It really works, you know. Plus, I think he's a very good vocalist, but I didn't think that I would ever really like him as much, you know, in my top five, but he's kind of gotten there. So.
Okay, then we get to Solitude, which is about, well, I'll let you talk first then. Solitude, you mentioned this briefly before, but what do you think of this song?
Oh, solitude, right? So, oh yeah, I think I touched upon solitude. So solitude, I mean, they're definitely, I liked it because it broaches the big question in life and like about, you know, about being alone, and it like I think touches on death a little bit, but I thought that that song was meant to be a very thinking song. I guess Ozzy didn't remember it, but to me it seemed like it was supposed to meant to be a very thinking song. And it reminds me of a song like when we go into the studio when I'm jamming, and they say, when they say, what do you want to do? And I say, oh, I want to do something psychedelic. And then we turn down the lights in the studio, we kind of write something like solitude. So that's how I felt about the song.
They added a delay effect to his voice to make it sound like there was a second vocal track.
Oh, is that what they were doing? Oh, that's cool.
But yeah, and Tony plays the flute and piano on that song as well. But
Yeah, that's a
yes, it's
beautiful
probably one
song.
of their slower Sabbath songs. I don't know if they would have. I didn't. Sometimes I look up how what songs they play live. I never did that for this episode. So I'm not sure if they would have played that live much or not. I'm not really sure.
That would be interesting. I don't know. I saw them in 2017, so they
Oh,
didn't
did
play
you?
them.
Okay.
Yeah.
And that was with Ozzy.
Yeah.
That was okay.
And I don't know that drummer, but he was great.
Oh, okay. I don't even know. I don't. Yeah, I don't recall.
I don't know who he was. He was a young guy. He was really good, but yeah.
Okay, then we finish the album off with Into the Void. And do you like this one?
I like it. I think that was supposed to me, that kind of does end the album because I feel like Into the Void is like Masters of Reality, kind of like a black hole, pardon the pun, type of song, I think to me what I liked about it is definitely the instrumental side of the song. Like to me, what I remember from that song is the bass the most. I kind of really feel the bass there and the bass lines there. And that's one of the songs that when I've been working on learning the bass, that's one of the songs that I kind of put on my list to learn. So that's how I looked at that song.
It said I read, I think this was Tony said this, that they recorded or they tried to do this in a couple of different studios because Bill Ward, the drummer, couldn't get it right. And he started believing he wasn't capable of playing the song, and he'd
Oh,
say, "To
wow.
hell with it, I'm not doing this." And then Ozzy also had a problem with the song for some reason, singing it or something too, they said. So it was the most difficult song that they did on the
Oh,
album, I guess,
interesting.
for some reason. But yes, it's definitely a doom one, and that was another one they tuned down the guitars and bass for.
I feel like tuning down, though, it's interesting that that was like a mistake. But I mean, not a mistake, but like a way for Tony Iommi to work with his accident, because that's like everybody. I mean, I was recently in an aggressive metal band doing death. I'm doing aggressive vocals, and the whole band always like tune it down to either C sharp or D. Tune it, it's like, and they would say it's a Black Sabbath thing. I was like, okay. That's what they would say to me. I'm like, I said, what key is this in? They're like, Black Sabbath key. I'm like, okay.
Well, one of my writers plays guitar and he teaches guitar. And like, if he was on this episode, he could probably tell us a whole big thing about
Yeah,
guitar
I'm not the
or whatever. But
guitarist.
sorry, he's not on. Okay. So now I was just, well, okay. Usually we rate the album. Do you want to give it a rating out of 10 if you were a writer and wanted to review an album?
Okay, so in there's only six songs.
Yeah.
And there's three that two that I love, and one that I think is very, very good. The others are good, but like not compared to the other Black Sabbath albums. I don't, I'm gonna give it a 7 out of 10.
Okay, that sounds good. Now, what would be your, is Heaven and Hell your favorite Sabbath album? Did you say that?
Yeah, I think
Maybe
so.
yes. Okay.
I think Heaven and Hell.
My favorite Sabbath album, which people may not like, is Born Again.
That's cool. No, that's cool. I don't know why. I haven't listened to it recently, to be honest with you, but I remember listening
I
to it.
love Ian Gillan and Deep Purple, and it was kind of a different Sabbath album. So
Listen, Deep
it's kind
Purple
of
is the best.
really, it's not really.
Yeah.
Like you could almost think it's not Black Sabbath in a way.
Right. It's someone else.
Yeah, but since
Yeah.
Ian's a singer. But anyway, and I was going to mention, or I was going to ask if you've seen them in concert, and you just mentioned it. So is that the only time you've seen them, or did you ever see them before?
Black Sabbath's the only time I saw them.
That was only time.
Ozzy, I've seen a million times.
Oh, okay.
I met Randy Castillo. That was probably the best day of my life. Yeah, I remember. He shook my hand. He was the nicest guy. So, no, I've seen Ozzy many, 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 many times.
I've never seen Black Sabbath, and I've never seen Ozzy by himself
What?
either.
Oh my God.
But I did see Heaven and Hell,
Okay.
which was the Dio and Naomi after Sabbath.
That's way
And I saw
cooler.
Dio a few times on his own.
Wow, I'm
Never
very,
saw
very
Dio with
jealous.
Sabbath either, but the Heaven and Hell thing, they still played a bunch of obviously Sabbath songs too.
Yeah.
So that was the closest I came to seeing Black Sabbath, I guess.
That's really cool.
Probably because of my age thing, because they were already, like, by the time I got into metal, they were probably already almost broken up, maybe from
Yeah,
Ozzy.
no, you're right, exactly.
Okay, so, and I asked you about a top 10 list, and you're going to do your top 10, or yeah, your top 10 vocalists. Is that what you're going to do, right?
Yes, top 10
Okay,
vocalists.
let's do it. Let's hear it.
Okay, all right. So I'm going to start with who you just talked about, would be Dio. Numero uno, period. There's no one that compares except for maybe second, which is not metal, which would be Freddie Mercury. I'm sorry, but he has to make this list. So, I mean, come on. I like Paul Di'Anno quite a bit, actually, for Maiden. I like him a lot, a lot, a lot. Dickinson would be next, of course. Under that is definitely Jeff Tate. I almost want to put Jeff Tate higher up, but I can't. Like, I want to stick my Maidens up, but I love Jeff Tate. I think Queensryche is one of my top bands, so I love Jeff Tate. Under that would be Rob Halford. Again, it's hard to list these guys because they're all awesome. I mean, it's kind of hard. You mentioned Ian Gillan, right? Also amazing. He's up there. I can't say her last name, but I'm a huge Ginger fan.
Okay,
Huge.
yes.
Tatiana Sharp. I can never say her last name.
Yeah, I don't either.
Girana. If I could sing like her, like she's my goal. I like love her voice. I like Bon Scott quite a bit, actually. People don't give him the props, but I do. I love Bon Scott. I loved everything about Bon Scott. Let me see, who else have I not mentioned? Let's see. How many did I list? Because I'm just
I don't know.
rattling.
I wasn't counting, sorry.
I wasn't either. I think I've listed a lot. I gotta throw in Sebastian Bach.
Okay.
I listen to Skid Row every single morning as a singer. Whoo, that guy's the best. His vocals are ridiculous. And I've seen Skid Row a million times because I love his voice. Who else? Metal. Randy Blythe. I'm terrible with last names. From Lamb of
Randy
God.
Blythe, yes,
Yeah.
yes.
I mean, he's awesome for different reasons. And then I guess I'll just wrap this up and say Corey Taylor. I mean, this is a metal podcast. What's weird is I was always a Slipknot fan, but I was like, eh, with his voice. And then when he started like doing acoustic stuff is when I started really liking it. So I don't know. I love so many singers. It's very hard to say 10 for me.
Yeah.
As a
Now, actually, I did
singer.
make a list. I wasn't going to say my list, but I guess I'll just r ring it off because a few of them are on your list.
Okay.
So, but I love Taylor Momsen. Now,
All right, I was gonna put her in there.
I'm not going in order here
I was gonna say,
necessarily. Okay, if
yeah.
I did go in order, Mike Patton would be my first one.
Also, I love him.
Of Faith No More, of course, and Mr.
Yes.
Bungle and a bunch of other groups. So, but people know I love Faith No More if they listen to the podcast. So yeah, he would be my number one, I guess. But I also Taylor Momsen of the Pretty Reckless. I
Love
just
him.
love her voice too. And that's, I know it's close to metal. It's kind of metal, but it's hard
So
rock.
I do. I actually cover Pretty Reckless. I love them. They're such a good, solid band. But go ahead. Yeah.
Yes. And see, and then of course I have Dio and I have Bruce Dickinson, which of course you had. I have Ian Gillan on my list, of course. I have Robert Plant of Led Zeppelin,
Oh
just
yeah. All
I'm
right.
old, so
Hello. Like
and I have
rubbish.
Bon Scott. I love Bon Scott too. You mentioned Bon Scott, so I was actually surprised. Not that I don't know you that well yet or anything. So, but yes, I love Bon Scott, AC/DC. Let's see, who else do I? And I got Mike Muir from Suicidal Tendencies.
Oh yeah. I got to sing with him on stage like last year.
Oh, did you?
Yeah, I mean I always get front row, so we rushed the stage and people are just like singing and I just grabbed the mic because it's me. I'm like, No, they're really nice people. That band are just, they're just nice people.
Yeah, and of course, Infectious Grooves, he was also in, and
Oh, true, true that.
that's it, yes. And let's see, and I have two others that are passed away, actually, two of the other ones. Let's see, Dio's passed away, Bon Scott's passed away, and let's see, Eric Wagner of Trouble, or The Skull, the band,
Oh,
the
yes,
original band,
Trouble,
his
old school.
vocals, and John Oliva, of course, of Sabotage, or past of
Yeah,
Sabotage,
right.
basically. That was just doing it really quickly, making up my list. I'm sure it is hard to do that, just like you said. But anyway, that's just rounding off my top 10 quickly.
Awesome, that's awesome.
Okay, so yeah, so that's it. So I think we've already hit an hour or so. So that was good, or almost an hour. Do you have
Yeah.
anything? Thank you for joining me. This is very interesting to hear the stuff about your band, your podcast, everything that you're doing, and you're friends
Yeah.
with Georgina, one of the writers here at the Metal Pit, who suggested you for the
Yeah,
podcast.
thank you, Georgina. Yeah, we're like I'm involved with the meetup group and all of that, so.
Yes, that's on Facebook, right? The New York Metal Meetup, is that what
Yeah,
it's called?
New York,
Yes,
New
okay.
York, New Jersey, Connecticut.
Okay, so anybody can look that up. Do you have any? Thank you for joining me. Do you have anything you want to say to anybody out there to give
Yes,
us
well,
your addresses or whatever to check
yeah,
you
so the
out?
number one thing I want to say, well, first of all, I want to thank you so much for taking the time to interview me. I really, really appreciate it, and it's fun. And then I wanted to just do a couple of announcements, if I can, about shows. So
Yes.
March 7th, we're playing a show in Queens. If anybody that listens lives in Queens, at the Shillelagh Tavern. We always do benefit shows because one of the songs that I wrote, "Calling 911," has been used to raise money for domestic violence shelters. So, anyways, we're part of a benefit for this organization called RAIN that raises money to help stop sex trafficking. I'm not producing this one, but that's March 7th. And then I am producing a concert on March 21st in Williamsburg, Brooklyn, at the Pink Frog Cafe. And musicians are welcome to come and join. It's supporting Women's History Month. So, any female musicians that want to come and play, please reach out to me. And then I have a couple of new song releases coming out. So I'll just give you some quick addresses. So Silent Fury Band, like the whole word, you know, if you just look that up on YouTube, any of the social media channels, you can find it. Jazz Rock Singer, the whole kind of phrase, you want to look that up if you want to hear new music. And then Warrior Women in Business, you know, is very important because I'm producing concerts quite a bit. So musicians can kind of get involved. There's a lot of ways to get involved. And get supported through the different things that I'm doing. I would definitely say I'd love for people to listen to the music and just, I love to hear feedback with like no intention. So listen to the music, let me know what you think. I would be really excited because I always get different feedback from all different listener types. So to me, that's kind of from a listener standpoint, that's what I'm looking for. And yeah, I mean, that kind of covers it for right now.
And I'll put some of your links, or as many as I
Yeah,
can,
of
in
course.
the descriptions and stuff here when I share it. So yeah, so thank you for being on again. It was great talking to you, and we talked about our 71 there, Sabbath. We went way back.
Sabbath. Oh yeah, and I hope to make it into the concert. I didn't get a ticket. I waited 3 hours online.
Oh yeah, I was gonna mention, I didn't, yeah, Black Sabbath getting together
Believe
one
me,
more
I'll get there
time.
somehow. I'll make it happen somehow.
Yeah,
Somehow.
I don't know. I know the tickets are pretty pricey,
Yeah,
but it's also like Metallica's there. I don't have the list in
it's
front of me.
insane.
Yeah, but there's a whole bunch of
Yeah.
bands there, so obviously you knew, and Sharon Osbourne has anything to do with it, you know.
Of course, yeah.
But anyway, yeah, so hopefully somebody gets to go see it and they can come on the podcast and talk about it.
They should.
Okay, thanks, Jasmine,
Thank you.
and thanks everybody for listening. Goodbye.